is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor at worldsweeper.com, and I have on the phone with me Ron Barnett, who is the owner of Blown Away Sweeping, LLC, and they're based in Orlando, Florida. And congratulations, Ron, on being our worldsweeper.com July 2009 Contractor of the Month.
Well, we appreciate that very much. I'm glad to be here with you. I look forward to going through our process with you, so that'll benefit our industry.
Well, and you know, I couldn't appreciate that attitude more. And I know that you and I have talked a number of times at trade shows. You run a very professional, straight-up organization with lots of facets. So why don't you start by just giving kind of an outline of when you got into the industry and why on earth did you get into power sweeping?
Well, we got in the industry in 1999. I had a stellar year in the commercial real estate industry as a salesperson, and I actually tried to buy in to one of my existing market competitors' business at the time so that I could help facilitate his growth as a salesperson. And unfortunately, we weren't able to reach a agreement, and we became competitors. And to this day, we still talk from time to time. There's no bad blood between us. We're both industry professionals, and we enjoy competing with each other in the marketplace. When we started the business, I was naive enough to believe that I had the expertise and the executive experience to consolidate market share through acquisitions of other companies and drive performance into the customer base that we serve.
What did you decide ultimately instead of that? I mean, something has made you very successful. You have, 20 pieces of rolling stock, 40 employees. What has been the model that has worked for you in this 10 years? And congratulations on reaching the 10-year mark.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. It's been a wild 10 years. When we talk about achieving certain goals in our business, we talk about it not just in a balance sheet format, but we talk about it from an infrastructure standpoint. One thing that you have to remember when you first start out in business is market share, and how much market share exists in the marketplace for you to capture so that you could run a business efficiently and productively for your client. You're not just doing it for yourself. I'll stress this over and over again. You are running an efficient operation with depth for the benefit of your client. And until you're able to reach certain volume points within inside the industry, you have to backfill that with infrastructure. And in our industry, what you find is a lot of folks who don't take that into consideration. And I did. And that's what I mean by being naive. I was under the impression that the market share that existed was much larger than it really is. And when you roll up your sleeves and you spend 10 years in the industry, what you find out is that the market share is a lot smaller than you ever imagined, and that puts the hair on the back of your neck up.
You bet, especially when you're already in the business. And so does that mean that you then do other things besides sweeping? You try to advance it horizontally, or what was your direction of travel?
You can grow an operation horizontally. We have been very successful at growing our operation horizontally, but we picked and choose what areas to grow horizontally. And we've made some mistakes. You know, this 2 years ago, we made a monumental mistake, you know, one that, you know, fortunately we've been able to absorb. But growing horizontally means that you need more depth and more expertise within those industries that you grow horizontally in. And once again, back to what I said before, if you don't have the ability to backfill your organization with infrastructure to provide a better value to your client, you're not going to achieve any efficiencies by growing horizontally and not doing more volume.
Well, that makes sense.
You know, there's an age-old saying, you know, don't build the apple cart bigger, dummy. And, you know, we've you know, we've done a little bit of that. I'm not going to say that we have not, but what we've figured out is that if a add-on component to our business doesn't bring in over $1 million in general revenue, chances are it's not worth even doing. And I think if you look in the marketplace and you really pay attention to the marketplace and notice the facilitating companies that have been dominating the marketplace, you come to the realization that the fragmentation in the industry that we have exists because of the fact business owners such as myself don't take that into consideration.
They're willing to stay with the smaller segments?
You know, I don't want to say they. I'll use my, you know, myself in that. You know, I did not take into consideration the workload effect of taking on work that didn't substantiate the infrastructure cost.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the crux of the industries that are all around the country right now. I mean, you there's been a tremendous push on, I consider, the blue-collar, service-oriented sector to fragment. And that fragmentation leads to business owners that aren't really business owners. They're employees with business licenses.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very thought-provoking. You know, your goals in terms of a market segment that you're getting into is quite ambitious. If you say, well, you know, it needs to bring in $1 million in revenue before I get into it. At the same time, I think we see over and over again by a lot of even some of the big players in the marketplace that they underestimate the true costs of really everything that that constitutes change. You know, they turnover of employees. You know, when we were at NPE last year, there were a couple contractors saying, you know, it cost me $10,000 to change over an employee. And other people are saying, you know, no way. But then you go through all of the things you have to do, loss of manpower, retraining, putting the ads out, interviewing all the people, getting the guy up to speed to where you were, where the guy is replacing is, and you think, well, you know, it's certainly lots of thousands of dollars, whether it's 10 or not. At the same token, to come back in with what you're saying, you have to go out and gain the expertise, get the infrastructure, learn the new task, market it out to your existing and new clients, add it into your brochures, websites, communications with customers, and so forth. And there's an incredible entry barrier cost there that I think a lot of times people are pretty casual about saying, oh, let's do this too, let's add this service too, before they're over their head.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's the great news and the bad news of the economy we're in right now is that the credit markets are so tight that the folks that don't have solid business plans and solid business models and solid cash flow are not going to be able to penetrate or operate within the marketplace like they have in the past. So a solid foundation going forward in today's environment should net a strong organization a lot of benefit within the marketplace today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I sure agree with that. Let's talk a little bit about your operation. What kinds of services do you provide?
Our core businesses are parking lot street sweeping, pressure cleaning, porter service, which has a lot of different definitions around the state of Florida. So to clarify that, porter services, personnel that go out on the property and manicure properties to a standard that a sweeping crew could not get to in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I see you call it, on your website, you call it white glove service.
Well, it's certainly more labor-intensive and more detail-oriented. And let's face it, a customer doesn't want to pay a sweeping truck cost per hour, fuel consumption, insurance, and what have you, when they can get someone out there on the ground detailing it with a less expensive piece of equipment.
You bet. Typically mechanical hand equipment. And one of the things that I want to bring out for contractors listening to this is, you'll hear from everybody that the economy's down and they can't pay as much as they used to pay and, you know, so forth. But the fact of the matter is that consumers of all, on all levels, are being more discriminating between with what they are doing. And now is actually an enormous opportunity for porter services, because companies are looking to get that dwindling market share, get those dollars to walk onto their premises. And what better way than to have a real sparkling exterior?
Well, there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. The problem in our economy right now with regard to that specifically is the real estate market and the credit markets. Just as any consumer walks in the door and evaluates whether or not they want to shop there for various reasons, the same due diligence should be made as to who you want to do business as a business owner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a critical component that seems to be missing in most operators' business plans. I believe that we have walked away from several customers the past couple of years. Here recently, we've had a customer that has asked us to reduce our service times to fit in a new budget, and these are folks that we have a deep history with, and we have decided to sweat equity their need for the time being rather than reduce our service because our good name is present at that location. And that's something that, you know, a small contractor would have a hard time doing.
Right.
You know, he's not going to walk away from the work due to a reduced time or a reduced service, not just service time, but reduced frequency.
Sure.
He's going to take that on, not knowing what the tenants in that space are going to think about them. And that's the key component. You don't work for just the landlord. You work for the tenants and the patrons of that center. And when a tenant knows that they're getting quality service, and they look at their CAM budget, which is common area maintenance budget to the layman out there, they look at that and they see blown away in there, and they go, wow, you know, those guys are the only guys that I see really care after my business. They try to do everything they can to make my business shine so that I can achieve my goals. Therefore, I'm willing to spend that extra money.
Good
that's
point.
That's the position that we like to be in, So when we're put in a position that jeopardizes our name or our brand, we withdraw, or we, depending upon this particular customer I'm talking about, we decide to move forward with that customer in the lean times because they were good, so they were so good to us in the good times. And even that has its limits.
Sure.
And they know that, and we know that. And, you know, we'll make those business decisions as that time comes.
Very good point. One of the things I'd like to bring up that's on your website that I was very impressed with, you have a series of sliding pictures, and I'd encourage everyone to go to the website link that is posted along with this audio. But with each of the photos, which are very nice photos, quite nicely done, clearly shows your logos on all your equipment, and, you know, nice clean equipment, again, very well done. But you have two words with accompanied with small graphics that accompany this, and I'd just like to read some of those words. On one screen, one word is professional, the other is green. On another screen, one word is sharp, the other is skilled. On another, simple, affordable, fast, efficient, friendly, smart. Very nice choices for those words, and they're each time things that are quite complementary to each other, and both of which you'd like to have and that work, you know, well together. So I think that speaks to your overall professionalism and your business model as well. So congratulations on that.
Well, we appreciate that. We spent a lot of time and a lot of, you know, and I say this with all humility, a lot of money getting the education that we've gotten.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a cheap process, I
right.
can assure you.
Well, and then utilizing the hard knocks lessons, I think, is another side to that. What are you, you know, I'm seeing on your site a T500 tow-behind sweeper. Where do you think that particular machine fits in the marketplace these days?
Well, let's do one thing first. Let's talk about the marketplace for one
moment. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about what's happened over the past 3 years to 4 years so that everyone can get a common understanding of how I perceive the market.
All right.
What we noticed about 3 or 4 years ago was that our market share was increasing, and not our personal market share within the market, but market share in general in the Central Florida market was increasing due to the rapid pace of development. At the same time, customer base was shrinking simultaneously. So that's an
odd combination.
That's a very scary phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
What we saw was these large real estate investment trust funds making runs at each other to bulk up their volume in order to bulk up their top-line production to the benefit of the Wall Street guys.
Yeah.
And we paid very, very close attention to that. And I want to stress that to anybody that's getting ready to start a street sweeping business or property services business, as we like to call ourselves, out here in the industry, and that is observe your market every day. There isn't a day that doesn't go by that my BlackBerry doesn't spit up the stock values of our major customers. Almost 60% to 70% of all of our business comes through publicly traded companies. And with some of the bankruptcies, one in particular this past year, in seeing that, you really need to make sure that you're building your business on a foundation and borrowing, because you borrow to build a business at first. You're borrowing with the right people. You don't want to wake up one morning and go, I made the wrong decision, and it cost you your well-being and your family's well-being and your health. And I can't stress that enough. To be in business on your own out here, to fight the fight every day, to learn the lessons, it's an agonizing learning curve. And don't go into it ignorantly is my point. How that relates to the equipment we choose relates to the density of market share we have. And let me talk about density for a minute. When I talk about density, I'm referring to geographic density. Geographic density it will make or break you in this industry. There were times where we took on large customers knowing that if we didn't backfill those customers with other properties, we were going to lose money. And that puts a tremendous burden on, one, your sales force, which I happen to be that sales force. Two, it puts a tremendous burden on your operators. And what I like to tell a customer is, if your hiring decision doesn't include the question, how many properties do you have near my property that you currently service, then that procurement agent probably doesn't know a whole lot about your business. And if you're not aware of that, then you've just put yourself behind the eight ball. So density is a critical component in those choices. With the
And yet you'd be amazed at how many contractors don't even think about that fact, especially when they're consolidating routes and those sorts of things, adding new routes. That's amazing.
My opinion of our industry, any industry really, not just ours, is that this economy we've been in has been so robust that inefficiencies existed simply because you could ignore them.
You could get away with it, sure.
Yeah, and that's just not happening.
Right.
I'll give everyone a perfect example of what I'm talking about. And this is kind of a little bit different and off topic a little, but I'll give you an example. About 5 years ago in the Orlando market, the real estate market got so hot that blue-collar operators like plumbing companies, AC companies, companies that had large fleets couldn't afford to find property in proximity to major highways and freeways. So they sprawled out to other areas that didn't serve their market well. Now, when gasoline is $1.85 a gallon, you don't mind paying less for real estate because it seems like an efficient move. But as inflation occurs and as your costs get driven up, you wake up one morning and go, holy smokes, that decision to spend X number of dollars on a cheaper piece of real estate on the outskirts of town becomes highly disruptive to their cash flow, which allowed them to buy the real estate in the first place.
Right. So they're making short-run decisions and without what-if scenarios added.
Yeah, and it happens every day in the marketplace, and we're guilty of those decisions as well. We're not going to sit on a high horse and say that we haven't made those decisions that have cost us money. I've got three trailers that are sitting in my yard right now because we didn't buy the biggest trailer to begin with. We progressively went up the scale, and so it cost me two times the value that it should have if I would have just bought the right piece of equipment the first time. So, you know, I see that in any industry, and that directly relates to density. It directly relates to whether or not you can serve that customer. Now, here's the kicker in all that. The customer that we serve, and everybody needs to pay attention to what I'm about to say, doesn't want you to be efficient. They don't want you to be efficient at what you do, or they would never hire you to perform work in areas that are outside a 30-minute radius of your home base. Your customer and my customer is concerned about one thing right now, and that's their AR and AP cost. And that is driving their decision to go to one vendor stopping shops. Any questions on that?
It's very thought-provoking. So to compete, you have to do what the customers want, which is to be a one-vendor stop-and-shop, which I know a lot of the market and a lot of the customers are going toward on the parking lot side. You know, maybe this brings us back around to equipment choice. And I'll give you the answer to the question I asked initially, which is where do you think this tow-behind sweeper, which is the, you know, kind of a new entrant into the market, goes. Where I think it fits in is that it allows contractors to provide every level of service at every price and compete with the startup guys who have no idea of their costing, have no idea of, you know, kind of what they're doing. They either have an old chassis machine, or they have a tow behind, or they have a slides in the back of your pickup truck, or, you know, something along those lines. And you can compete with all of those guys because you have better business savvy, you know what you're doing, you know how to sell it, and you know how to keep the place clean. For example, in my opinion, the tow behinds, which are mechanical, do a great job of picking up litter, but once in a while you need a backup air sweeper to go in and just pick up the fines. And if you don't do that, if you're competing with somebody that just has those machines and never has the capability of going in with an air sweeper once in a while, then to me you can blow them out of the water because you say, hey, here's the deal. You got slip and fall problems. You have track-in problems if you don't get that stuff off, you know, once in a while, once a week. So, you know, how have you seen a change in the product mix to meet the customer's requirements, the new emerging customer requirements?
And when you're saying product mix, you're talking about what, in terms of equipment?
Yeah, your equipment mix. We have single engines, we have twin engines, we have slide-ins, we have tow-behinds. We have more hand work.
All right, let me say this, okay? I want to say this so I don't offend my friends over at Victory.
which is the machine that I saw there, yeah. Yeah.
When we make an evaluation of a equipment choice, the variable that comes in to our valuation of it is the property needs and the properties that will be serviced by that equipment. It's not vice versa. We don't look at it and say this equipment can run this much cheaper, it can be that much more efficient from a cost standpoint. The first thing we do is we look at a property and say, what type of equipment can do this job
effectively from a labor standpoint. We have always tried to reduce labor cost, not equipment cost. Big difference. Now, cost of operating equipment in terms of true cost, and I don't think many people would share this with you, but our cost of maintaining our equipment is not a big driver in our operations. The cost of repairing our equipment being damaged by operators is the driver. So we believe that that is a very small component in the evaluation of our equipment selection, because we can amortize equipment out longer than suggested. We've got pieces of equipment in our yard right now with almost 10 to 15,000 hours on auxiliary motors. Back to the evaluation component. When we make the decision on equipment purchases, we make them related to property need. And that is our core driving principle. And I think that everyone should evaluate a property with that pretense. And once again, if you're not able to reach a volume point that allows you to have the type of security of being able to use multiple pieces of equipment, then you're at risk. So, and secondly, I will say this regarding all this, is the other driving component for us is ease of repair. And what we've noticed, particularly with Victory, is that they've spent an enormous amount of time evaluating downtime for a contractor and parts availability and equipment swaps in terms of part swaps. And you can see that in their design process, which led us to the natural selection, in my mind, of choosing their product line.
Well, I didn't know what you ran. What is your mix between parking area sweepers and construction or sweep the street machines?
That's a great question. I'm probably a great advocate for Victory because that's a product line that we've chosen to go with for our franchise model and our current business model. However, we run all Elgin equipment currently on a vacuum side. All of our parking lot sweepers are the old Elgin Air Cubs. When we made the purchase decision back then, we thought that Elgin had the most superior product on the market. We have Elgin Eagle, which is a mechanical broom sweeper for big construction jobs. And obviously construction are few and far between right now, so that doesn't move as much as we'd like it to move.
And do you want to, we need to wrap it up, but do you want to talk about your franchise opportunity?
Well, I do, and I want to start off by saying that everything that we spoke about in terms of operating efficiencies, risk factors, density, all of those components are what drive the efficiencies into our franchise model. We are very hopeful to be successful with the model. We are excited about the model. From a business standpoint, the model has all of the right merit, and we believe that the marketplace will force small contractors to consolidate with larger ones, and larger contractors to consolidate with other large contractors.
So, are you saying that what you offer in your franchise model is all of these economies of scale and professional, shall we say, business model tweaks and understandings that you can offer then to a smaller contractor or somebody that wants to be a contractor in an area so that you can much better assure their success in a difficult marketplace? Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. If I had someone like myself, and I'm a very cooperative, community-oriented business owner, and what I mean by community-oriented, I'm referring to community-oriented within my industry. If I had the bridges to grow my business and to operate the way our franchise model does, chances are I would not have gotten as large as we are today. We do not look at our equipment, our people, our balance sheet as a measure of our success. Our measure of success is our quality of life. And our quality of life has been drastically reduced within our current model. And when you grow up and you recognize that, and at 30 years old, I did not recognize that. At 38, I do recognize that. It just changes your perception of what business ownership should be.
So you have a decent income, and at the same time, you have a quality of life that recognizes that we're just here for a little while and get the most out of it that you can.
Well, yes. In essence, yes. I think when I'm referring to quality of life is, you know, being, you know, obviously being with your children and enjoying your better half, or my better half, I should say, which would be my wife, you know, and not working, 75, 80 hours a week. I don't think that anybody to 90 hours a week should work that. And I got to turn off an alarm here, so I apologize. I don't think anybody should work like that and not have certain assurances in the business that they're building. And that's something that we took into consideration when we built our model. We never wanted any one particular customer to occupy more than 10% of our bottom line. Since the day we started, we've been on a race to reduce the revenue any one particular client takes up in our revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone to start a company and get into that race against an existing contractor and against market conditions, you are a one in a million shot. We have been very fortunate to reach our level, and I don't want to use the word success. We've been fortunate with the achievements that we have had. Do I think it's replicatable? Yes. Do I think that journey is for everyone? Absolutely not. Do I think that journey could be different? And the answer is yes. And that's...
And that's what your franchise model brings to the table.
That's exactly why we designed it. Mm-hmm. We, you know, 2 years ago, we made the choice internally not to grow anymore. We let our cash flow and capital depth catch up to our previous years. And so when you make that choice, you get introspective of your company real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And every day that I wake up in the morning, I look at myself and I say, Ron Barnett and Blown Away with one truck could beat the Ron Barnett with Blown Away today in terms of quality of work and craftsmanship.
Well, you couldn't provide all of the services that you provide as a full-featured, multifaceted company. But, yeah, the point is well taken.
Well, you've got to consider the fact that a coalition of small owners with controlled density will outperform any large middle-managed bureaucratic organization.
That's right. I've heard that from many of the contractors through the years, and I think that's both a boon and a bane to the industry, because a contractor who knows his costs and is doing it on his own, or you know, with another person, maybe with a single operator or two, can I think do a very good job and keep up with all of the quality control issues. However, a lot of times those folks don't understand their cost, and so they're kind of whoring the marketplace.
I don't want to say they're whoring the marketplace. I don't think they're whoring the marketplace. They are operating at the most efficient level.
Well, but some of them are doing it at the right price, but some of them are only there for 6 months or a year until the first thing breaks, they have to replace their sweeper, and those are the guys I'm talking about.
I got to tell you, we love those guys because we appreciate their heart and their work ethic. And those are the types of people that we would like to recruit for our franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those folks right there, they are efficient at their level. They're not going to be efficient at 20 trucks,
right,
or 40 guys. And let me say this. There is no industry that looks at a service provider and says, you've gotten too costly for me due to your size.
Right.
There's supposed to be economies to scale. But in our industry, there are no economies to scale. The bigger you get in our industry, the more money you spend managing it.
Mm-hmm.
So for a guy to come in and undercut me that owns two trucks, I don't get annoyed at him. I don't say that he's undercutting the market. I don't get upset. I simply look at him and say, that guy is working for a living, and he has no costs that I have, and he can beat me. And there's that's business. I mean, you know, if the smaller guy can beat you, in the market in terms of his cost, then, you know, you're in trouble. Now, where we beat him is depth of service. Is he going to be able to assure the customer of everyday production? Is he going to assure the customer that all of his insurance is in place? Is he proficient with his emails? Can he work all night and work half a day during the daytime? Does his billing get out correctly? Those are the types of things that he'll trip up on.
Yeah.
Will he be able to work all night and then fix his truck all day long and then go back to work? And when we first started, or I first started, and I want to make it clear to everyone, I did not fund this company with any money whatsoever. Blown Away was started with straight sweat equity. And there were times where I worked, and I still hold the record around here, and something I'm pretty proud of. I did a 51-hour run.
Phew.
And I can remember almost passing out in the back, washing the truck after the fourth shift. And I'll never do that again, by the way. I mean, it was unhealthy and it wasn't the right choice. But I was 30 years old and filled with it. And, I did it. And there's not too many people that are going to do that. And so that's where the failure occurs. The failure occurs because it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you're by yourself, okay, and you're wondering what the hell you're doing. I mean, I can send you pictures of my wife and I celebrating the 4th of July and New Year's Eve in sweeper trucks with bottles of apple cider, sparkling apple cider.
Yeah, and that's the quality of life that you're talking about.
Well, it's great. I don't have any regrets. The only thing that I'll tell you is that when you evaluate going into a business, I think the first thing that you have to evaluate is, where do I need to be, number one, to be acceptable for my customer? Two, where do I need to be in volume so that I can get a couple days off when I need them? Where do I need to be in volume to be able to understand how my equipment works and be able to fix it? And, you know, those are real questions that should go into your decision-making. Fortunately, in our franchise system, those issues go away. And, those issues become non-existent because you become a part of a group or an organization that has insurance built into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's a community of people where we're all pursuing the same goal. And probably the most significant benefit of a successful franchise, and we're hopeful to be successful. There's no guarantees. But we would like to be able to bid work on a regional and national level. And I don't think there are any contractors in the street sweeping industry currently that can bid on property on a national level.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
And that's what I mean by our customer base will not allow us to achieve economies to scale because no one has ever gotten large enough to hit those economies of scale.
Mm-hmm.
So one other thing I want to talk about real quick, and I know we need to wrap this up, but I want to say a couple of things with regard to our existing model.
Mm-hmm.
14% of our general revenue goes to truck maintenance and mechanical staff. 14%.
Now, define mechanical staff for somebody who...
We've got two highly qualified folks on our team that maintain our equipment every day.
Okay.
They're their
so,
welders.
So labor, labor and parts for labor, keeping everything
labor
going.
Labor and parts just to keep the trucks running.
Okay.
We document everything that we do, and we find that 75, and I think, you know, I may be a little bit off on the numbers. I'm just shooting off the hip here, but a very high percentage of those repairs are from operator error. They've got no skin in the game, zero. And that's a problem. Two, our infrastructure to manage our labor force to perform properly makes up another 11% of our general revenue. That is staggering. That's what it takes to maintain customer satisfaction. Because when you got 40 pirates working for you, and I'm a pirate myself, so I'm not, you know, I'm one of the pirates. I'm Captain Ahab. I mean, someone's got to drive the short bus.
And you are in the land of pirates down there in Florida anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, let's face it. If you're working all night, okay, and you're by yourself and you're creeping around in the sweeper, you're a pirate. You know? And if you're running a pirate ship, okay, then you know it says a lot about you. But you know, I've got a sticker on my laptop that says "Pirates for Hire," and every time I go into an airport, you know, everybody looks at me cross-eyed. Well, I say, well, you got to meet the crew I work with. You know, it's a motley crew, man. But you know, and they're great guys, and I love it, and I love that type of environment. So I'm not complaining about it, but there are some facts that you have to come to terms with when you manage that type of you know that group of gals and guys. And so that's something that you have to consider, and you have to consider the cost going into it. So that cost is pretty significant, and the repair bills and the cost to sweep up after them gets pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
Our AR and AP cost, and let's just talk about this real quick, go lower with more volume. At $4 million a year, we can handle $6 million to $7 million worth of accounts receivable and accounts payable. That is one area of our business where, as you get larger, your economies to scale have an immediate impact on you. However, when you're a small guy, that's one area that you'll never reach any economies to scale with.
All right.
Okay. So now you got three, you know, those are three costs that I'm referring to. Now here's the deal killer. Here's the big one, okay? A sales force. All right? If you think, and most of my competitors do, okay, you have people that are managing multi-million dollar budgets, and they're managing on multiple platforms. If you think you have the sales skills, woo them, and to gain their confidence, and you have no depth in the sales industry, you're in for a serious wake-up call. So our cost associated to our sales forces, you know, and I'll put myself in there at a modest salary, is probably going to account for 4 to 5% of our total receivables. So right there, when you look at those costs, you immediately take a step back and go, gosh, do I really want to run a business that is that large? And two, how much volume do I have to maintain to cover the cost of that infrastructure daily? How much debt do I have to incur to cover that type of workload? And you look at that and you wake up and go, I don't want to do that.
And so that's the point of your franchise, really, is to merge the best of both worlds.
It's crazy not to. It's absolutely, and we, one of the biggest markets that we believe that we're going to be the most effective with this with our franchise campaign will be existing contractors. that are running one truck to two trucks, and they go, hell, heck yeah. You know, why wouldn't I want to be a part of that system? Why wouldn't I want to have the ability to bid on properties on a national platform? Why would you hire or work for a facilitator who's who comes in and makes you feel good about getting work for you as a sales staff for you, and you never, ever ask them, and you sign a non-compete with them, and Ranger, you know who I'm talking about. I don't need to name names or point fingers. I mean, I think everybody who's listening to this tape knows who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you ever, ever let them fragment, one, your industry, two, manipulate you into thinking that they work for you? They do not work for you. You know, they are working for your client. And so for you to build a business model off of that is, may have been successful for you, may have been great for you at one time, but it doesn't need to happen. Folks in this industry need to realize that they can hold the line. And if you hold the line, there's a benefit to everyone.
Well, I think that's very thought-provoking, and I suspect some people out there listening to it will want to know more.
Well, either that or they'll think I'm crazier than I'll get out. But that'll be, you know, I have a an open door policy, and Randy, you heard me say this before, and I'll say it again. If you can't figure out what type of competitor I am by watching me work in the marketplace, then chances are me talking with you will not create any revelations either.
Well, and I think you've been a poster child for having that kind of an open process and making it work, and certainly being successful in what is a very tough Orlando and that whole region of Florida these days, that whole region of our country. So
it's mean, it's gritty, it's a lot of fun. You know, I originally came from New York, and the song goes, you know, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. But you know, if you can make it in Florida, I think it should be, you can make it anywhere.
That's the new the name of the new song.
I'll go into my Frank Sinatra rendition in
right.
a second.
Well, let's leave it there. We've been talking to Ron Barnett. He's the principal of Blown Away LLC. They're based in Orlando, Florida. They not only have a very full-featured sweeping company, but he has a franchise model that he's looking to expand around the United States to allow for competitive national bidding by a network of contractors. And if you want to know more about that, you know, give them a call. The links and all that are on the page where you clicked on this interview. And I appreciate, Ron, I want to thank you for a very thought-provoking interview that took it one level above the standard, you know, here's what we do in our business. You've really touched on some of the bigger questions and bigger answers that I think exist in our industry, and I appreciate you taking the time to do that.
Yeah, absolutely, and I appreciate the opportunity to share my experiences with anyone out there that finds it of value.
All right. Well, thanks, and again, congratulations on being the July 2009 Contractor of the Month.
Thank you, sir.